The Magic Podcast, hosted by Lloyd Barnes and Craig Petty. Your all-access, behind-the-scenes insight into the current happenings of the magic industry, where Craig and Lloyd will thrust themselves deep inside your ears every Wednesday to rant, dissect, and give you their raw and unfiltered views on the art of magic. So, lock your door, take out your deck, and brace yourself for the Magic Podcast.
Hey guys, welcome to the Magic Podcast, episode one, with me, Craig Petty.
And me, Lloyd Barnes.
You almost missed your cue there. You didn't.
I do it every time. I'm never ready.
I know. You've got to look for the point. So that's the moment.
I know.
Craig Petty, and you lose points. But okay. Guys, thank you so much for tuning in to the very first podcast. And I know but both you and I, we are super excited about this, aren't we?
Oh, crazy excited. It's going to be like a... well, excited and nervous.
Why? Because you're appearing on a podcast with me and you know my reputation. Yeah, I'd be nervous as well if I were you.
Yeah, yeah. And we genuinely have agreed to be like no holds barred, which...
And I think it's important that people realise that from the get-go. Before we even start, I think we need to tell people why we're doing this podcast. And I know you did a little video on your YouTube channel, which was amazing, by the way. But for people that haven't seen that, why are we doing this podcast, Lloyd? What's the reason?
Because, well, me and you spend hours on the phone every week. Mm-hmm. And we just, like everyone does with their magic buddies, we say it how it is to each other. And you say how it is on your videos anyway. You don't give a fuck. But there's so many good magic podcasts out there in their own specific fields, like yeah. the Magician's Advice podcast, which is, you know, mainly about magic advice. And there's interview podcasts. And there's just, we both couldn't find anything that talked about all encompassing to do with magic, fraternity, community industry, but that did not sugarcoat anything or... You know, like there's some reviewers that just don't give a negative review. Not yeah. You're not fucking one of those.
No, sure.
But there's just magic reviews. And it felt like, I don't know, if people want to hear us. So it's the conversations you hear at 4 a.m. in the Ruskin.
Yeah.
When the hardcores are still there, the passionate ones are still there, and you get into the real nitty gritty shit, which is the most interesting stuff. And we just thought you guys would want to hear what we like to hear.
And I think the other thing that people need to understand is that there's not many people that have been around this industry as much as you. Like, I mean, obviously going back to Enigma and then spending all of the years at Illusionist before now being part of the creative team at Murphy's, as well as consulting. You know, a lot of people don't realize, but you've consulted with various different big name magicians on various different high profile things. You know everybody. Like, I'll ring you up and I'm like, hey Lloyd, you okay? Yeah, I'm just chatting to Dynamo. I'll call you back in a minute. You okay? Yeah, I'm just chatting to this person. I'm like, man, I've never even spoken to this person and he's having a conversation with him. Oh my God. I know you're very humble, but you are very well connected. You know everybody, and there's very few people with your experience and where you are right now at Murphy's that know as much about this industry as you.
I'm so glad this is a podcast and not a video, because you'd see my head swelling up like a fucking balloon right now. But also I think this brings us to the core reason why this podcast is interesting is because of your connection too, which is you've got to be the busiest and the most successful gigging magician in the UK. With the team, the company you have, but also you have a reputation of you create so much magic, you perform so much different magic, that basically it's like, well, you're also a creator, but it's like the top of your game performer, and some and me that has a you know, my entire adult life has been in the magic industry, not as a performer. So when we start talking, we have some really interesting discussions that approach a lot of subjects from two very different sides. And we don't always agree, but I think it cultivates, instead of being an echo chamber of two performers or two creators having a conversation.
Absolutely.
Because we're approaching things from two, sometimes very different sides, too. Sometimes we completely agree, you know, but it instead of it being an echo chamber, it's quite, we can challenge our views and opinions on things, which I think is really important in all conversation.
Absolutely. And that's something else that people need to understand. Lloyd is an incredible creator of magic, an incredible thinker, an incredible innovator, but you don't perform. You've never done a paid gig that I'm aware of.
No.
You've had them offered to you many, many times. People have offered you a lot of money to do a paid gig, and it's just something that you've never wanted to do. Yeah. Whilst I'll whore myself out to anybody that wants to pay me a few quid to go and entertain their guests. I don't care. What I get a go on the buffet and give me 10 quid. Yeah, I'll be there. So
we're looking at it from... No one can pay me to perform, and no one will pay me to create. Yeah. No, but it's but it's interesting. I think because like I'll come to you with an idea, and you can say, well, that's, yeah, Lloyd, that's really out there and it's a cool method and it's super visual, but how the fuck would you perform that for a layperson? I have to go, oh yeah, maybe that's a shit idea. Actually, it's just for TV. And and then you come up and it's the same thing. You come to me with a creation and it's like you're approaching it purely from what's going to blow a spectator's mind. And sometimes you can be like, oh, what if we just tweak it to make this bit interesting?
Well, morning, like, I came to you with an idea, if you remember, to do with credit cards. And I was like, well, here's an idea. What do you think of this? And you were like, oh my God, that's amazing. But what if we change this? What if we change that? And I think when you're creating magic, and we're going completely off a tangent here, I think it's important to have somebody that you can talk back and forth with that can bounce ideas off you. Because if you're just creating in your own sort of ecosphere or your own snow globe, what's going to happen ultimately is you're just going to have one person's perspective on it as opposed to, you know, looking at it from a completely different point of view.
Yeah. And I think with, you know, without getting stuck on this topic for too long, because this is like sort of, we've got a brief outline of the podcast, but without, this is like the why does it exist? The advice that you give me helps me make quite drastic decisions in my career and what I'm going to do with my magic in terms of like, I sent you a video. I was like, oh, I don't know whether to post this video or not, because it was a potentially polarizing thing for me to do. And I went back and forth with you for ages on it. And eventually like, I was going to say no to it, but your advice convinced me to do it. And if because of the experience you've had in, you know, 12 years out of the industry, how many years before, you know, then that was a big decide. So yeah, talking with you was always gets me to think more about everything to do with Mike.
And I know how you feel because, you know, so many times I'll go and post a video and I'll be like, no, I can't post that. It's too controversial. Yeah.
Said Craig Petty fucking not once in his life.
Not once. And actually, talking about that, before we kick this podcast off, I need to address something with you. You are at the head of creative team, well, not the head, but you're a big part of the creative team at Murphy's Magic. You work alongside some amazing people. You know, we've said that nothing's off the table. You said we've said that we're going to address absolutely everything, and we're going to make it really interactive, and listeners are going to ask us questions, and we're going to approach every question that gets asked. If somebody said, hey, discuss why Murphy's Magic are a pile of shit, are you going to be like, I'm not going to address that question, or are you going to go full in?
Nothing's off the table. Completely full in. I'm not going to give politician style answers to anything just because I work somewhere. If people aren't accountable for things, or companies aren't accountable even, or people won't look themselves in the mirror and you know, address an issue, then nothing will get better.
With that in mind, tell me some dirt on Javier, because nobody can be that nice. Like, there's got to be a skeleton in his closet, because honestly, he's the nicest man I've ever met.
There is physical dirt on Javier after this weekend. So last week, he messaged me super quickly before we jump into it. He messaged me, Lloyd, you got to get this thing called a one wheel. And for everyone that hasn't seen one, because I hadn't, it's kind of like a electronic, you know, those little like hoverboards that kids have, but it's like a one-wheeled version for like a skateboard style. Mm-hmm. And he was saying it can go up to like 25 miles per hour and it's super cool. You can recharge it and stuff. And then George, I was speaking to George yesterday, and he's like, oh yeah, Javier's not in. I was like, what's happened? He fucking had an accident on his booster board, on his one wheel over the weekend, and fucked himself up.
Oh my God.
So I made a meme saying, hi, I'm Javi Knoxville, welcome to Jackass, and sent to him, said, hope you get well soon, buddy.
Oh, that's just brilliant. That's just brilliant. Makes me feel a little bit better as well. So we've addressed why the podcast exists, right? And we have various different sections, because we're going to be talking about these various different sections every single week. And the first section is going to be, kind of news and events, Magic World news and events, right? What's going on in the Magic community?
Yeah.
What's going on in the Magic world? What's stuff to talk about and so on and so forth? And I think that, you know, one thing that we should talk about is Magic conventions, because we went almost 18 months without having Magic conventions worldwide. Over in the States, they've just had MagiFest. Over in...
I've never been to that.
No, me neither. I really want to go as well. It's meant to be really good.
Let's do it next year.
Yeah, I think we should go. Let's do it. And they've obviously announced Magic Live for next year, and Blackpool is coming up in February, which is super exciting. They've just announced some of the acts. And obviously, both of us have just been to the London Magic Convention.
Yes.
So let's talk about some conventions. Let's talk about the London Magic Convention. What did you think of it, Lloyd?
I thought it was a brilliant... this sounds so underhanded, and it's not. It was a brilliant first attempt, as in, I couldn't do it that good if I tried to do one. Room for improvement, and I think that's a good thing, because there's no convention that doesn't have room for improvement. But what was really nice about it was that everyone there was sort of a serious magician, not as in like they're boring and serious, as in like they took magic quite seriously, and that meant that there was you could have comfortable conversations, because like when you go to Blackpool, some people are there just to go on the piss, some people bring their wives to have a holiday, a little breakaway, and they only go for the gala shows, some people just go for the dealers, but it wasn't the case. I think everyone at the London Magic Convention was just there as a serious student of the art, and that meant that you could quite flowingly chat with everyone, and there was like, you're not going to walk up to someone and say, oh, you know, what did you think of that lecture, and you realize that they're 10 pints deep and they you know, they don't give a fuck. What did you think about it?
I loved it. I really did. I think that if I had it, and first of all, Preston and Andy did a fantastic job, and I know they're planning the second one, and that's brilliant, and that's awesome. I wasn't a particular fan, to be honest, of everything taking place in one room.
Yeah.
For a couple of different reasons. The first reason is, one of the things I like best at conventions is jamming. I love going over to the cafe at the Winter Gardens at Blackpool and just sitting down with a couple of people and just showing each other magic. You know, that's what I love doing. That's my favorite thing, just sessioning with magicians and showing each other. There was nowhere really to do that other than that outside area, which was kind of out the way. There was no other area that you could do that. That was my first issue with it. I think it needed a jamming room or a sessioning room. The second issue with it, because everything was in one room, I felt a bit sorry for the dealers, because I think that the dealers weren't getting the traffic that they could have done, because everyone was sitting in the room to watch the convention or whatever was on, and then they were leaving because they wanted some fresh air. I spoke to a couple of dealers, and they hadn't even broke even. And you know that it's quiet for a dealer when you've got Mark Mason,
King Pitchman,
king of pitches, and he's during the dealer time. He's sitting there reading a newspaper, sitting down.
Fucking hell.
Just sitting there.
Yeah.
Like, when did you ever see Mark Mason not working his butt off? Because I've never seen that happen. And that to me was an eye opener. And I know a couple of dealers didn't do very well. And I don't think it was because of the convention or it was because of the people that were there. I think it was because it was very tight in. When you were around a dealer stand, because there were chairs there as well, it was hard to have more than two people there.
Just to give people an example of the layout. So if any of the listeners weren't there, is that imagine a giant square room, and there's the stage at the bottom end and 200 chairs facing the stage. The dealers then were on the left-hand side and the right-hand side of the room facing towards each other onto the chairs. There wasn't actually any space to you had to like sort of shuffle by the side of the chairs to get to the dealers. And it was a really awkward layout, but I think that comes from them not wanting to book a bigger venue just in case it didn't work out. And, you know, and we're saying this, they must be aware of this. Obviously they're super, super smart guys. The pair of them, they're brilliant. So I think it was just, you know, just do it the first time around, just make sure the format sort of works, which it did.
But and you then, know as well as me, I think the most important thing, I mean, I've never run a magic convention, so I don't know if I'm right or not. I was involved in the planning of the early lads conventions with World Magic Shop, but it was really David Penn's thing. But one thing that I would imagine, is dealers are the most important part of a convention. Yeah. I know that there's lots of magicians that go to Blackpool that don't watch a single lecture. They don't go to the magic convention. Sorry, they don't go to the gala shows or anything like that, or the performances. They literally just walk around the dealers over and over again and then go and get pissed in the evening. And then they do that for 4 days. And yeah.
I don't go for the dealers specifically.
Of course, but, not. You're at Murphy's Magic. You see everything.
I see everything before it comes out. Yeah, but it's the dealer's hall is where everyone hangs out, or the bar after it. So, like, I'll just be in the dealer's hall for like 40% of my day, or 50%, 60% of the day, and then the rest of the afternoon.
Imagine, can I ask you a question? Yeah. When you're at a convention,
yeah,
are you working really? Are you like, because you're in the creative team, so one of your things is to look for new tricks that Murphy's can release, right? And when you're at Illusionist, part of your thing was to work with artists and release their products. So when you're at a convention, are you kind of working? Are you kind of there networking, looking for a trick that you can go, you know what, Murphy's will bring that out? Or are you just there to have a good time? Like, what's your agenda?
When I was at Illusionist, it was quite heavily focused on that. It was all... I'm trying to think of what's the word, not gerrymandering, but it was all like PR and trying to get people on side for Illusionist the majority of the time. With Murphy's, with the London Magic Convention, we sponsored it. So we sent like some free gear to put in the goodie bags. And then for that, they sent us 2 free tickets and we were just there to represent Murphy. So there was no work to be done, essentially. Obviously, you always keep an eye out for anything that really stands out, but it used to be, and I hated that because...
Well, reading between the lines, by the way, what Lloyd's saying is if you see him at a magic convention and you've created a trick, no matter how shit it is, go up and watch it. Don't show it to him. Make sure he watches it. My plan is to get a stream of people just coming up to you at every convention going, Lloyd.
No. I took my wife to Blackpool, the last one, I think. No, the one before the last Blackpool.
That's when you know you're married.
Our honeymoon was Magic Live, no joke. But and Florida. No, but her family live in Scotland, so she was driving from Wales to Scotland. And I said, she only called in for like 5 hours. She got there and I walked from the dealer's hall. I took her to the dealer's hall and then we walked from the dealer's hall out to a restaurant to get some grub. And on the way out, I got stopped like 6 or 7 times and people were like, oh, can I show you this? Can I get a watercraft? And she thought it was like the coolest thing ever. She went home and told her family. And all I was thinking, I love seeing new. I was just thinking, I feel bad saying this, but like, fucking leave me alone a little bit. I wanted to show my wife like the dealer's hall and everything about a magic convention. And as flattering as it was like, fuck. And she thought it was cool. I thought it was the polar opposite. But
you want to experience a magic convention, just stick her in a little room with 50 blokes in bad odor. That'll do the job.
Yeah. Honestly, I think that I was going to say somebody should just have a deodorant stall, but no fucker would buy it.
No, they wouldn't. No. Fuck Murphy's sponsoring conventions. They need to be sponsored by Lynx. Here's your goodie bag. It's soap and it's deodorant. There's your goodie bag. That's what you're going to have. Fucking use it.
But going back to the London Magic Convention, the same thing for me that was missing is that the only place to sit down and chill and have a conversation was outdoors on the balcony. And it was freezing. It was late October time or mid-October. So I think next year, obviously they know all this, but like just venue where dealers can be separated from lecturers and then a separate place as well to jam. And I think they've got it nailed because what was so nice about it, because let's go into the positives about it were like the format, how they just didn't pack it with too many lectures, and also the closeness of it all, as in like not the distance wise, as in that there was only 200 people. It wasn't, it was like a very communal vibe to it. Even though positionally we couldn't really have that air, the potential is there. Whereas other conventions just did, like the Session Convention used to be in Gloucester for years and years and years.
I remember I lectured there.
Yeah, you lectured. Did you lecture in 2007?
I can't remember. It was when Will Houston was there and everybody was trying to make... Everybody, while I was there, I was doing this little session on coin magic and Will Houston was there. And everybody was trying to get me and Will to have a coin off. And I remember thinking, there's no fucking way I'm having a coin off with Will Houston. I will literally die on my ass in front of everybody. Leave me alone. I was like, no. I'm not into competing. If I thought I could take him, I would literally...
Just break his fucking fingers.
Yeah. I haven't spoken to Will for years. I kind of got a bit pissed off with him after he was the only person that gave a bad review to Chop. In the in Magic magazine. And I still haven't fucking forgiven him about that. Anyway. Oh, sorry. Where were we? Yes.
One man's gold is another man's rubbish, isn't it? Is that the other way around?
Yeah.
But like the session used to be in a, basically like, what was it? Like you'd have a theater sort of room, a close-up sort of parlor room, a dealer's area, but it was centered around like a main lobby, and the hotel they did it in, it worked because you could hang out quite easily. Now it's in a fucking airport hotel, and the bar is where in the middle of where you check in. So yeah, you're like hanging out, and there's people like that are not magicians just strolling through with their suitcases trying to, and it just, and also it's. Obviously, it's good for their business that it's so big now. But, like, you know, I haven't spoken to one single person that hasn't said that the session just doesn't work as well anymore.
I haven't been to the session for years because, obviously, I dropped out of Magic for a long time. And the first convention I went back to was Blackpool 2020. And, London's the second one. So I've not been to many conventions recently. But I'd definitely check out the session again.
I'm going to go to it this year if there's tickets left, if they'll accept me for saying this about it. I feel bad because obviously they work really hard on it, and they've proven for years they've nailed the convention. But the last three or two, as soon as they moved to London, the first two in London, I think, because it was in the same hotel, and that was all right. But then they moved it to it, but it wasn't as good. And then they moved it to the new hotel, and I'm hand on heart, I haven't spoken to a single person that said it's as good as it used to be. The amount of people that used to fucking love it and just are not bothered.
Well, you know, you got to remember that when the session convention first started, there was no Vanishing Ink. Vanishing Ink didn't exist. It was Andy Gladwin, and I'm pretty sure Rob James had something to do with
Rob James, yeah.
And I spoke to Rob, by the way, at the London Magic Convention. Yeah, he's pretty much dropped out of Magic.
Why?
I don't know. I'm going to do an interview with him at some point. But he's like, for me, one of the best magicians ever. Like, yeah. And he was always at the top of the SEO. Like, he was the man. Like, when you have, like, SEO, you know, it was like Rob James saying, like, fuck off, Rob. He was, like, always, like, beating everybody. And his I don't know if you ever saw his competition act. His competition act was brilliant. His laptop act was the best, one of the best competition acts I've ever seen.
I've seen some of his stuff.
He had a laptop. I mean, I'm not going to go through the whole convention, but he had a laptop, right? And he said, this has got AI in it, and it notes every single time I do a bad magician-y shit magic joke, and it counts it. And he was like, and then he was doing this act, and he was doing all these cliched jokes. So he was like, he got a spectator up, not that hand, the clean hand. Ding, and it goes up another point on the laptop.
that's really fucking good.
And then the number that it eventually reached, I think the card was at that number or something. And it was really funny. But yeah, he said he's done like three or four gigs in like a few years now. He's not really...
Oh, bloody hell.
I know, but when Robin... So my point was, and when Rob and Andy were doing it, it was not like part of this big... Vanishing Ink has got massive. Like, yeah. It's become... corporate. It started off, and I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but it started off as this little thing, and before that it was just Andy, and then over the years it's got bigger and bigger and bigger, and they're now probably rivaling the size of somewhere like Penguin. Like, they're really, really big, and I think that when you get to that size, it's going to attract more people, so the convention, it's going to be very difficult.
Yeah, I wouldn't like to be in their shoes in terms of trying to solve the problem of how do you keep the magic of what the session had? You know, like, it captured lightning in a bottle. There was ones in Gloucester, and I, and then, but then they're a business, right? Like, I'm in the magic industry. I know, right? You've got to make profit, otherwise you won't keep the lights on. But how do they combat? For me, I think, without giving too many of my thoughts on what they need to do to fix it, you know, it the heart of a convention, it's A, the dealers, and B, it's the comfortability. Is that a word? The comfort.
Yeah.
It's the comfort of a convention, as in, you know, we need to have, well, I'm not going to give all my thinking on it away, but yeah. And it definitely doesn't have the comfort feel to it. You know, you can't comfortably jam and mingle around without having people go in and out. But I think Vanishing Ink are incredible. And it's so good to see a company start. I remember that when they were first created, to see how it's grown. And now, yeah, I think they're like, because, you know, it was Illusionist was the biggest, and then Theory 11 came along, and Penguin has always, like, sort of always been up there as well.
I'd be willing to bet that Vanishing Ink is further along than Illusionist right now.
I think I say it's like Theory 11 just pretty much do licensed decks now. You know, they get the brand license in for like Harry Potter, the Beatles, and things, which is a great business model because the decks are amazing. But I don't put them up as contenders in the magic industry. I think they're like a subsection of it in my mind.
Yeah.
But I'd say it's got, like, in terms of, because like Penguin, they sell other people's products. So did Vanishing Ink as well. But I feel like, I don't know, I feel like Vanishing Ink is the top spot for we're a wholesale, we're a different business. But I think Vanishing Ink are quite comfortably, at least in perception. I don't know. Penguin and Vanishing definitely either neck and neck, or
they're the two. They're the two, aren't they? Yeah.
Yeah, they really are. And good on them.
Yeah. It's hard work to get to where Andy and Josh have got.
Really hard work. And they're both 10 times better magicians than I. So they deserve every ounce of success. And I wasn't like shitting on the session convention. You know, no. It's just, I feel like it they had something really good. Well,
I don't know Andy and Josh really well. I know Andy better than Josh, and me and Josh know each other to speak to. But I would say, knowing them like I do, they wouldn't take that as like a negative of you. I think they'd take it as like, you know, I think they're always looking to improve, you know? It's not like you're saying Andy and Josh are scum and they need to, they're ruining the magic industry. You're saying, well, you know, the convention could be a little bit better, I think, and this is why. And I think that's fine.
Well, you're always the student, never the master. If they thought it was perfect, then they wouldn't be where they are today. Do you know what I mean? I think the issue is that sometimes you echo chambers, right? So no one will, maybe they've obviously heard the feedback, I guess, but maybe they haven't been told it as straight, because it's the fan base will sometimes just become an echo chamber. But yeah, like if I was being 100% honest, is that it feels like it's almost entirely lost the magic of what it had. I'm not saying take it back to Gloucester, change that venue up though, big time.
Yeah.
Sit in an airport check-in lounge.
Yeah.
Airport hotel check-in lounge. That doesn't fucking work one iota. But then I don't know how much money that convention makes for them, and they could potentially not give a shit. I don't think that's their thoughts, but you know, who the fuck am I to question it?
Very true. Who are you? But you know, with that in mind, you know, is there anything else you want to talk about magic news? Did you want to? I know you've got some very interesting views on competitions. Do you want to leave that till next week, or would you like to delve into that one as well? Because obviously, while we were there, we saw the London Magic Convention had a magic competition.
Oh, yeah. Well, who did you think should have won? Who did you think should have won it?
Right. I personally think that Jasper Cherry should have won. Nothing against Edward Hilsum. I think he's an incredible performer. I loved his coin work. I thought everything was very slick and everything was really good. Jasper Cherry, I thought, won it for me. I had him down to win. I was very surprised when he didn't. And I think it's maybe because he was very much a BGT style act, in that he was doing the sort of, but I don't think there's a problem with that. That style works. And I thought that he was very confident at the age of 15 years old. He went up there very confidently, got the crowd on side, did some really good magic. I thought it should have been Jasper.
I said to Bo that Jasper could have won, potentially should have won. But my issue is it's much deeper than that. And it's, first of all, Jasper's performance was, I'm trying to think of the word to describe, kind of like street-style organic magic.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas
yeah.
Ed's was more theatrical.
Yeah,
parlor.
Yeah.
And I got deeper rooted issues in that style of magic personally, but it's like how can you? They're two very different styles. If that was Fissom, they would have been in two separate categories. So to put them against each other and then choose a definitive winner, which when people can take these things quite harshly, and not harshly, but I don't know Jasper at all, but he could be so disheartened by that that he doesn't enter another one. But my overall thing is that this could upset some people, but I don't think magic competition should exist at all.
Oh, I think they're fucking stupid. I disagree with that. So you tell me why, and I'll tell you why you're wrong.
It's right. Magic, in my eyes, with my views on magic, magic competition shouldn't exist. So I'll tell you what my view on magic is, and then you'll probably understand why I think they shouldn't exist. If you want to create magic, it should feel like a real experience, I believe, right? So it shouldn't. This is why a massive reason why I don't gig, right? And I've turned down some really high paying offers to perform, because when I perform and I choose when I want to perform, I really do my best to try and make my audience believe they've witnessed something fucking real, like absolute. And there's no way out for them, hopefully in their head. And it's a real experience of magic. When you see things like, when you see dove acts or manipulation acts or stage acts like that, inherently the audience know they're fake, because inherently they know they've had to practice that 1,000 times. So to me, that type of magic, if I'm a comparative to it, it's like a dance. It's like a dance act, or it's like an expressive dance act, with elements of trickery, magic tricks sprinkled throughout, because the audience know it's not real magic. They haven't experienced real magic, but they've watched somebody do something interesting. Like they've watched an entertaining piece for 5 to 10 minutes, and there's elements of magic throughout that, but they know in their guts it's not real magic. So that, for me, you can't really have the best magician competition that the spectators would go, oh, well, he won an award. Like layman will go, oh, he won an award for being the best magician, because magic should feel spontaneous and it should feel organic and real. So when I put air quotes for people who can't see, when I perform, I don't go into magician mode. Like, oh, hi, let me show you a trick. I'm myself. I talk normal and I have these ways of weaving in magic, the moments of magic, or I try to at least. So the fact that someone can, so basically what it should feel like to the layman that watched me perform, and I'm a fucking shit performer, so let me just put that out there. I am bollocks at performing, but what I try to do is that they should feel that what they're saying from me is the very first time that I've done that. It's the only time they'll ever get to see it, because it was a special moment of magic. So by framing it as a competition means that, oh, he's just done that before. And then it takes away the magic, because it's like, I get it now. Right. Okay. It's something he just does all the time. He does that thing. That wasn't a piece of astonishment. That was a trick, like a single and a CD. So that's kind of why I think magic competitions are a bit stupid.
I understand where you're coming from.
And I'm wrong.
The thing is, magic competitions are for magicians. They're not for lay people. You're not going to find lay people in a competition watching the competition. It's for magicians. And, you know, you
why do they, but they shouldn't put it on their websites then? Oh, I won the closest performer of the year.
It's not just about award-winning magician. Some people enter because they want to have the social proof of winning a competition. Absolutely, yeah, for sure. But there's a million other reasons to enter a competition. They've got this idea for this wonderful act and they want to kind of give themselves a deadline. Right, if I enter this competition, I know that I'm going to have to get this ready for this point. Some people just like to prove themselves and just like to say, actually, I am good and I'm going to go into this competition. I'm going to prove I'm good. Some people might do it because they want that platform to perform, because let's be honest, how many times do you get to perform? You know, it's not close up. I know they call it a close up competition, but it's not. It's a it's really a stage act.
Yeah.
Like you look at going out and doing it on at the London Magic Convention. People were all the way back. It was a stage performance.
Yeah, that wasn't a close-up act at all. That was, we were looking up at the palms of their hand. So, exactly. And they were on stage and there was 200 people watching them.
Exactly. And that's the, so there's lots of different reasons. So perfect example, Ryland. Ryland was watching that convention at the London Magic Convention. He was watching the competition. He was on the edge of his seat, like literally watching everybody. And at the end, he turned around to me and he went, Dad. And I went, yeah. He said, I think I could win this. I'm like, you're 9. He's like, yeah, I can win it. I was like, why would you even want to enter? He's like, well, it's cool, isn't it? Like, okay. And then he got up and he walked over to Preston and Andy and he was like, hi, I'm Ryland. And Preston was like, yeah, I know who you are. Hi, great to have you here. He's like, is there an age limit on the competition? Nope. Okay, I'd like to enter then next year.
He's in.
I'm there, just covering my face.
I think you win. He's fucking awesome.
My God. And then afterwards, I turned around to him and I went, what have you just done? He said, I've entered the competition. I said, what are you going to do? He said, I don't know, but I've got a year to figure it out.
What a little legend.
And Preston rang me the next day and he went,
bollocks like a bull.
Right, bigger bollocks than me. Preston rang me and said, is he serious? And I'm like, yeah, he's serious. He's in. Right, okay, he's in. He's already, every night, he's working on his close-up competition act for a year's time. But for him, it's not about wanting to have award-winning magician on the website.
It's a reason to practice and improve.
He wants to have a reason for practice. And yeah, your argument about layman being in the magic competition, layman, you can still do a competition act for a layman and make it really personal to them, and they get, you know, that's not a problem. It's a totally different environment. Creating that moment of astonishment for a layperson in a situation where you perform, which might be down the pub or wherever it may be, they don't know if you've entered a magic competition. Magic competitions are for magicians. I went back to Rob James's laptop act. That was fucking hilarious. Beep. Hold out the hand, not the clean hand. Beep. I was pissing myself laughing at that.
I totally get that. I think I'm coming from a very, very niche view on it, or very narrow-minded view, because I don't need to gig. Never had to gig, never done a gig, never wanted to gig in my life. So I get the luxury of saying how magic should be done. Some people got to make rent. And they got to do that, right? And then they need to stand out. So they need to have something like, or like you said, you know, some people just want to better themselves. So I understand that my views are slightly radical on it as a whole.
I used to love entering magic competitions. I've stopped now. And the reason I've stopped is I don't feel like I've got anything to prove. For me, I entered because I wanted to prove to people that I deserve to be there. Whether I won or lost, it wasn't important. I just wanted to prove that I was wanting to be there. I remember entering Blackpool. The close-up competition at Blackpool in Spanish Hall. Fuck off. Like, I remember like walking out. I'd never done a stage gig before. And walking out at this magic competition thinking close-up. And then there's like 15 million people watching me. I'm like, bloody hell. And I actually thought I'd nailed it. And then out comes John Vanderput before he found his little dragon costume and went to Vegas, and he was just John Vanderput, and he went and produced a dog in a close-up competition.
Fuck.
He produced a dog. He made a dog appear, and I'm like, well, that's it. That's me fucked, isn't it? And he did win it, and he made a dog appear. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm never going to go to my next corporate gig and go, hi, my name's Craig. Look, it's Anya. Thank you. Yes. Like, never going to fucking happen. That's the point. He made an act that would specifically...
My dog would just shit on the carpet as well.
For magicians, yeah, right? He made an act that specifically just appeals for magicians.
Well, this is the thing, right? So let me get to this. So magic competitions, right? There can be two magicians, just say it's a two-horse race, two magicians in the competition.
Yeah.
Judged by a panel of magicians. One of them is technically incredible. I'm trying to think who's a real technician.
Shin Lim,
right? You've got Shin Lim who can just do anything with a deck of cards and coins, just incredible. And then you have somebody like Danny Deortes or Greg Wilson or David Williamson, who's just like super entertaining. Like everyone just like, not saying that Shin's not, but like funny entertaining as well. You know what I mean? So you got one who's technically super skilled, the other one who's massively entertaining. Now, the magician's watching it. You know what it's like when you go to a magic convention or you talk to your magic buddies, you show them a trick. The magician always goes, at the pass, and then fucking ignores the ending, the reveal, right? So the magicians are judging them based on normally who's the better magician, right? And I'm getting somewhere with this. But then if you're going to show layman on your website, oh, well, I'm the best magician in London. Well, maybe you were technically the best, but were you the best performer? It's kind of like, I think...
I don't think you're going to win a competition if you... Because don't forget that there are certain judging criteria with a competition.
Yes.
It's not just technical ability. There's lots of other things as well. Entertainment value, appearance, magical content. There's a whole bunch of stuff. I think that if somebody wins a magic competition, there's a very good chance that they're decent performers. Because if they went out and they were like, hi, I'm a magician, I'm going to do a trick, and then they just wouldn't win. You wouldn't win.
So here's the thing, right? So magic's like the only art form where people don't know if you're good or bad by the end of your act. If you're a comedian and you tell a bad joke, no one laughs. Regular people don't laugh. If you're a singer and you can't sing, then everyone knows you're a shit. They're a shit singer. Mm. Magic, though, you could have people who are just fucking two left hands, cack-handed, can't do anything, can't even do a riffle force, yet the audience can watch them and absolutely be in love with them. They can be fooled by their magic, they can be bowled over, but then you can have somebody who's technically gifted with dexterity, but the audience just don't like them, and they don't give
up. I'd argue in that situation that, you know, you can judge whether a magician's good or bad by whether you've enjoyed their act. If they're hilarious, but they've done self-working magic, that's absolutely fine. That's obviously what they focused on. They're focused on making their act entertaining. I think not enough magicians focus on the presentation of their act. And they don't. Like, perfect example, I did a gig the other day with Richard Jones and Brendan Rodriguez and James Samuels. None of them have ever seen me work on stage. I very rarely work on stage in front of magicians. You've seen me on stage.
Twice.
Twice. And it's my character and my persona, my delivery on stage is completely different to when I'm doing close-up. And I went on stage and afterwards, Richard Jones and Brendan Rodriguez, they all came up to me and they went, we did not see that come in a million years. You were hilarious. When I go on stage and you've seen me, I'm doing self-working magic that you can literally teach anyone. I'm opening with the vanishing bottle a lot of the time. That's no skill whatsoever.
No.
I bring the house down every single stage gig I do, but you could argue that your example there is me. When I go on stage, I don't do anything technical at all, nothing technical. Probably the most difficult thing I do is I palm one card at one point once, and that's it. But I focus on the entertainment side of things. And I think that's the important thing. I think from somebody's watching a magician, I think they're going to tell the good magician or bad magician by whether they've enjoyed it. I've been to a gig once where I was working a multi-magician job, and it was a really well-known magician that I'm not going to name who is very well known as a creator and a performer and a huge technician. And we were working these big, massive banquet tables. And he was scared to walk over to the tables because his delivery style is very soft and not. And it was a very loud room. And you had to go over to the tables and really take ownership of it and go, hello. And he was just there. And I saw him. I was watching him. He wasn't going up. And then he kind of looked around for another table, went up to that table, stopped, went away. And I think he did like one table in 2 hours because he was shit, despite being an incredible technician. So how do you define a good magician? Surely it should be defined by...
But this is what I mean. In a way, is that like you could see a website for a magician, you're going to book a magician for a party, and it says, oh, winner of the Welsh Magician of the Year. So you think, you think, oh, great. But then they come in, and like you said, they're timid, they're technically gifted. But because you've seen they've won the award, obviously they must be good. But no, they're just, I don't know. I think I'm just diametrically opposed to magic competition in general. And I find like everything. Also, then it goes a lot more deeper rooted for me. Is that I'm also like, I don't even like the word magician. It implies you're going to do magic, which then takes away the spontaneity of it and the fact that it should feel organic and unrehearsed. But then again, this is because I'm coming from a point of view where I don't gig, and so I don't have to do that. So I don't know. I there's something about magic competition. I think if there is going to be a magic competition, it should be 10 tables with 10 laymen on each one. So 100 people total, split into groups of 10, and 10 entrants to the competition. One extra, just warm the crowd up. Right. And they go around, they perform for 5-6 minutes on each table, each magician. And at the end of the night, the audience votes on who's the best one. And
yeah,
that's their favorite, most entertaining one, whatever.
I totally agree that they should change how magic competitions.
Or at least that should be how a close-up competition should be, sorry.
Yeah. The Magic Circle, I think, have got the best way of doing it because it is a closer competition at the Magic Circle. The competitors compete in the Devant Room on a table to the judges and maybe one or two other people. So they're performing to like 5-6 people. Everyone else is in the theatre watching it on the huge screens in the theatre, and they're watching it from the other room. I think that's better because I think a lot of the time, somewhere like the London Magic Convention, the person who wins is going to be somebody who's got some experience performing on stage. Because when you walk into an environment like that and you've got no experience performing in front of that many people, it's very nerve-wracking.
Yeah. That wasn't a closer competition.
It was, but it shouldn't be. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, it was named a closer, but it wasn't a closer competition. That's kind of that section. My goals on magic. I get it. I get that it helps boost a career as well. It just not for me. Like the last thing I'd ever do. I think.
Let us know what you think. We want to know what you think. You know, on the various different Facebook groups that this is going to be posted into.
Yeah, you can find us on Facebook actually at Magic Podcast Co. Or on Instagram, Magic Podcast Co. And if you want to email me or Craig directly. It's for Craig, it's CP, and for me, LB at themagicpodcast.co, and let us know your thoughts.
Yeah, we'd love to know your thoughts. We want to make this podcast really interactive and really talk about the stuff that you guys want
to do. Here's a question, Craig. Do you think magic has changed so much, especially in the last 20 years with the advent of the internet and the way people live in a modern society? Do you think there should be new categories added to the magic competition? For example, best virtual performance.
Yeah.
Best social media magician, favorite YouTuber.
Yeah.
Do you know?
I think that'd be really cool. I think that'd be great. Yeah. A lot of conventions, like Blackpool doesn't do a close-up competition now anymore. I don't think it does.
Is it Parlour they do?
I don't think they do anything. I think they just have the Family Entertainer of the Year, which is the kids competition. I might be wrong. But I didn't see a close-up competition last time I was
there.
That
warms my heart that they don't have competition.
There you go. They're listening to Lloyd Barnes. There you go. They've got the ear of Lloyd Barnes.
See, I wouldn't be opposed if people were like, oh, if you perform at the Royal Variety Performance, that's not a competition, but that's a fucking career-defining accolade. I wouldn't be opposed if someone's like, oh, yeah, I performed at the Blackpool Magic Convention I was selected to perform. That to me is better than a competition prize. I don't know. I gotta go off this topic.
Yeah, let's move on. We want to know what everyone else thinks. Next section is, and this is going to be very interesting, especially we've got Lloyd Barnes from Murphy's here on the podcast. We're going to talk about new products and stuff that's coming out that's super exciting. I've got a couple of things. I don't know how much I'm allowed to talk about any of them. The first thing that I've been talking about forever, so I'm not going to stop now, even though Dee might fire me, is the 1914 wallet.
The one by Louis Laval.
You saw it at the convention. You saw it at the London convention. How fucking good is that wallet?
It's so good, to the point where I'm a little bit pissed off I didn't buy on the day. And I don't say that lightly, because I used the Steve Drawn Real Man's wallet for like 8 years after seeing Jonathan Cam using it on YouTube ages ago. And then I switched to the Nexus wallet last October. And yep, that's been fucking wicked to use.
Oh, it's great.
And then Lewis showed me this new wallet, which is another slimline wallet, but it has one feature that I need in a wallet.
Mm.
And that one feature is so good. I have to have it.
I've been using it at every gig, and I've been using it as my real wallet. And a couple of things that's nice about it. First of all, it organically holds your notes and your credit cards. Like organically, you know, your bills, your notes, your money, whatever it is that you want to carry around. It's got that there.
Is it on sale right now?
No.
I was literally going to impulse buy it on the podcast.
No, it's not. It's coming out in January.
I had a massive impulse to buy it.
On the ship on the way over, I believe. But it's a real wallet. You can carry it as your everyday wallet. It's also really good because obviously Louis Laval has spent 2.5 hours on the tutorial talking about mentalism applications for it. It's got an incredible peak. It's got
smart peak, actually.
Mm. But also on top of all that, I'm going tomorrow to film with Dee and Lewis and Jack from the 1914, and I'm filming some routines that I've created for it that have magical applications, because some of the stuff you can do
with the card to wallet you showed me.
The card to wallet. And the other thing that I showed you, do you remember?
Oh, the no palm card, sorry. The no palm card,
which is cool. And I've got a version of card in the box with it as well. So I've got a version of card in the box with it as well. I've also got a whole bunch of other stuff, including a really cool transposition. And did I show you the thing with the mem deck with it?
Yes. Oh, dude. Yeah, that's so sick.
It's like Colossal Killer, but without needing an out. Like, there's so much that you can do with this wallet. It's killer.
To go back to your card to wallet, it's a no palm card to wallet. I'm obviously not going to give anything away, even though it's a fucking no holds barred podcast. But what's good about it is that 9 times out of 10 people, no palm card to wallet is usually you take a double with their card behind it and load it in as you take the other one back out. That's not the case with your no palm card to wallet. It's genuinely a real good, smart bit of thinking. And I think that's worth the price of it alone, let alone getting the wallet with it. For me, I don't think this is giving it away or giving anything away. And if it is, I'll cut this after the fact. But it's got a very simple switch in there. And I use a lot of bill switches for magic style tricks, not for mentalism, but for magic tricks. And the bill switch happens on the outside of the wallet. And it's not some sort of mechanical thing where it, like, you know, does like an auto switch. It's just very, I don't want to say simple, I'd rather say minimal in design. Borrow a bill very openly. It feels, obviously, also, there's a fucking method, right? Mm-hmm. But it just 100% feels like it just doesn't leave their sight. They just put it, like, it's like you're just gonna, you know, you just put the bill in this bit, they can see it, they take it out, and it's switched super normal, super naturally. Yeah. And that's what I want it for, aside from having the peaks and the other features, the card to wallet built in. But it's brilliant. And I can think of I have at least 3 routines that I use at the minute that needs that feature. And
it's very unusual for a new wallet to come out that's got a unique feature in it. The Nexus wallet did that with the visible transpositions and stuff. Which is so cool. But this is doing the same thing. This has got its own feature that I've never seen in a wallet before that really has so many applications.
Yeah, I actually love it. Why didn't I fucking buy one on the day? I think I got distracted. I think you came out, showed me the card to wallet, and you segued into one ahead thing with Mnemonica, which I love. And then you spent like 10 minutes teaching me, or struggling to teach me, because I'm fucking thick how to do it, and I got it wrong like 5 times, and then I just didn't get one, which has pissed me off now. Maybe I'll message Dee, or if Dee's listening, send me a price.
Lloyd will pay anything. Just give him a price, he'll pay it. Another thing that I want to talk about that's coming out, and I don't know how much I'm allowed to speak about this. I have mentioned a few times on Q&As on my channel that one of my favorite things that's going to be coming out soon is a product of yours. And it's the very old idea that you have made way more organic. It's a coin thing that a lot of people will be aware of, and you've made it way more. I know I'm not allowed to say anything about it, but dude, that is gonna, every magician in the world is gonna do that. You can't see him. He's currently looking around for the prototype. He's like,
I was looking for it. I couldn't find it. I have some of the, it's not a video, is it? Fuck. This whole time I've been sitting here like blue steel, like trying to hold my double chins in.
No, I haven't. Video.
Yeah, no, it's, I can't say too much about it just because it's not like a top secret thing, but it's one of those product ideas that if I say it, it's one of those, oh, why didn't I think of that? So I'm not saying it's incredibly creative or super genius. It's just one of those things like, oh, you go, oh, fuck. And why hasn't that existed for 100 years already? Or why hasn't that been around for the
least? But you've been working on it for at least a year.
Yeah. Actually, I had they should have been on a ship on Thursday. And I wanted to make sure that each unit was perfect. And so I had them go through randomly 100 units. And they found that something needed tweaking in a few of them, so that they've held off to make sure that all the units have this tweak made, which, you know, even though it puts off the release a little bit, it's gonna be, I'd rather have it better quality and perfect than that. But yeah, no, I can't really say too much about it just because it's one of those things that you say it, someone goes, oh, I could do that, and then they do it, and then you're fucked.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's coming
soon. You're more excited about it than me.
I am. I know this. I am going to perform the shit out of that trick when it comes out, Lloyd. It's incredible.
Oh, thank you very much. Well, I think you'll probably be the only one that does it.
No, I don't.
Is there anything else that's come out? I'm looking at, I've seen, even though it's a Murphy's thing, this is not about Murphy, but Switcher 2 by Mark Mason. I think we did the trailer, or Javier did the trailer.
Javier did the trailer. Man, I did an interview with Mark a little while ago, and he was teasing this on there. And I did the original Switcheroo. I did it for years, and I've seen the Switcher 2. He's shown it me. He's shown me the routines. This is a game changer. Switcher 2 is going to be the next best thing. It really is. Everyone's going to want to get one of these. It's taken the original. He's slimmed it right down. It's so much smaller. It's so much more compact. It works flawlessly. It's brilliant.
Yeah, I don't know them. I didn't know the original, or I can't remember the original, and I don't know the full method to this. But I do wear top pocket t-shirts.
Yeah, quite basically what it
could
is.
Could I do it in a top pocket t-shirt?
You could, yeah. Yeah, especially the new version. It's got a, basically, it's something that you put in your top pocket and allows you to take a card or a number of cards, put them there so they're in view the whole time, and as you take them out,
yeah,
it's automatically switched. There's no sleight of hand. You just literally reach over and they switch automatically. So think about how you could have that full view switch, and that's basically what the Switcher 2 is. And you can switch 1 for 1, 4 for 4, 3 for 3. You can switch envelope for envelope.
See, so that's good.
Incredible cards across. Imagine having 10 cards put into an envelope and just putting there, and then you go, oh, can you hold on to that envelope? And you've switched the envelope with the amount of cards in. Like, the stuff you can do with this is just ridiculous.
Yeah. Also, like a bill switch as well.
Yeah. I mean, he's got a torn and restored card.
Bill, I'm going to place it here. It's like, tip for her, then take it.
Yeah. He's got a torn and restored card where he openly tours a card, puts it in the envelope, and then just puts it there. He goes through some stuff, and then when he takes it out, the card's restored.
I'm just browsing the Magic Cafe, which is the Daily Mail.
Why the fuck would you do that?
Well, there's two threads that have caught my eye, and they're both regarding the other brothers. So the first one is the trio thread.
Oh dear, are they mentioning me on there?
I'm looking on it now. Actually, I'm going to press Command F or Apple F and search for the word Craig to see if your name's popped up. No, your name hasn't come up on there yet, but I did see the video that you made on that.
The Honest Trailer.
The Honest Trailer. Fuck me.
Honestly,
I know nothing about the effect. That was fucking...
Well, I held back on the review show. I've reviewed it on the review show as well, and I held back because Ryland's sitting right next to me. But this is just complete and total bullshit. Just a terrible, terrible... You've got... And here's the thing, and I mentioned it on The Honest Trailer. Matthew Wright, the best thing the other brothers did was put Matthew Wright on the face of the thing, because the other brothers, bless their cotton socks, they can't perform for shit. And they got Matthew Wright to do the performance. And you look at the trailer and you see people laughing and joking and, oh, having a good time. But that's because they're laughing at his jokes. They're not laughing at the magic trick. They're not impressed with the magic trick. Well, maybe they are a little bit, not really. It's about Matthew's presentation.
Matthew's fucking amazing.
Yeah, you're not selling Matthew Wright here. You're selling a trick. And the bottom line is, from a methodology point of view, if you are going to do a prediction of three things, and three things are going to be predicted, in this case, they predict a celebrity, an animal, and some fruit, right? Methodologically, would you want a giant FedEx envelope that is huge?
Yeah, so this is the thing that I couldn't wrap my head around. So the final, you in the Honest Trailer, it says the final reveal comes from a big fucking like cardboard, an international shipping envelope.
Yeah, which is obviously full of shit because it is. No, there's like 50 outs in there.
When I watched that, I thought it was going to be the joke about, you know, like Justin Willman when he does Picasso, the color match routine on Ellen DeGeneres. And then he has that, the same style, hilariously big envelope and he goes through and pulls out one of what looks like 100 different pieces of A4 paper that have a different design on it.
Yep.
But then the joke is the kicker is that they're all the same prediction.
No, is that gag, but that's the method.
Oh, fuck off.
No, there's basically, they pick a celebrity and the celebrity is forced using an item that you receive, even though you have to print things out and cut things up and whatever, let's not get into that. But there's a force of the celebrity. Then, and this is the thing that other really got me, you then have to force the animal. But they don't give you a method for forcing the animal included in the project. Matthew Wright talks about how he uses a Sven pad, or he uses digital force bag, or he uses any web or stuff like that. So they're selling this trick where you reveal three items. One of the reveals, you have to pay extra money in order to get the device to force it. And he actually mentions, he says, oh, when the other brothers do this, they use pre-show, but I'm not going to talk about that. So let's talk about how I do it. And they don't mention how the pre-show should be done or anything like that. So there's that. And then the final version, they can freely name a fruit. And the reason they can really freely name a fruit is because they've got this envelope full of outcomes and you just reach in and you pull out, but it's a bit like a filing thing. So they've got little tabs on each one. So it's terrible. And you can't show the inside of the envelope afterwards.
Yeah, no, that's really that. Look, I don't know the other brothers. I've had like very brief interactions with them. They've always seemed like great people, lovely guys. I have seen the reactions to some of their releases, and there's a resounding opinion that I've seen, which is like they had a a card Sharpie trick come out.
Yeah, I didn't know.
But the method is the first method you think of, and yeah. And like I didn't know anything about this trick other than your Honest Trailer. You can't be releasing magic like that. Like you
that's
can't.
I'm not lying. That's the method. That's the method right there.
Yeah, I mean, no, I'm not even going
to
try and like
more to it than that. And Matthew goes into the whys and wherefores and goes into it. But the bottom line is, you have a big fat ass FedEx envelope, and your final prediction comes out of there, and you can't show the inside of the envelope at all.
Yeah, that's. I mean, did they first thing I would do is put a false front in there so that you could even, because those envelopes rip in half quite like a book because they're so solid. So I'd put like a false piece of cardboard in there, sell that as, give that included as a gimmick. So at the end, you can open that up wide so it looks empty. At least do that. Can you do that with it?
Nope.
Well, then you've got to add something to it. You've got to bring more to the table than that. You can't, I'm sure I can think of at least one effect that I released. My first ever release, I think, with D. Christopher that I put out, the method for the effect was exactly what you think the method is, and I regret releasing it, although it was good to have my first release with D. I don't regret releasing it with D. It's just the method was fucking shit. And when I create these days, whether it's for TV products, anything, I'm either given the brief of what the effect is, or I'm thinking of what I'm going to do, and I write down on a piece of paper or in my notes or on video, all the obvious methods of what the layman would think it would be, and what I write down what I imagine other magicians would think of first. And then that's my can't touch list, as in I can't touch those methods. And the same with like the card to Sharpie and what it sounds, you know, this effect, I would have written down, obvious methods have a bunch of different Sharpies, like loads of Sharpies. For this, have all the outs in the envelope. I would have written that down and then be like, right, that's the obvious shit. Can't do that. It's got to have a magic element to it. Otherwise, is it even a magic trick? Even though it's framed as a magic trick, it's not, is it? I think, yeah. Because it's like, well, name a fruit, okay, and I'm going to pull the corresponding one out of this file.
Yeah.
It's not really magic.
No, it's not. And that's the problem. That, like I say, Matthew Wright made it work. But Matthew Wright could literally take a twig and do a 15-minute performance with it and bring the house down.
And actually not do any magic with it.
Yeah, exactly.
But also he is brilliant as a creator too. I don't know the other brothers enough to diss them, and I don't like dissing creators. I just think that, and I'm guilty of it myself, so I feel like I'm qualified to talk on it. But yeah, don't do that. Don't release stuff like that.
Here's the thing, I'm a magic reviewer, and one of the things that drives me up the wall is just seeing terrible trick after terrible trick after terrible trick coming out. And it just drives me, insane that I have to just sit there. What the amount of tricks that I just watch, learn, specifically to review, and then put them in the bin, like, is just ridiculous. Like,
isn't it a funny one though? Because I always see the magic industry similar in so many different ways to the music industry. And if you think about how many songs are released a week and how many albums are brought out a year, and then, you know, 99.99% of them are fucking dog vomit, and then you get a couple of good ones, and it's like the magic industry, it's for a lot of people it's a creative outlet. It's just a creative outlet, and they, you know, some people just want to make money, and they know they can do certain things and make money off it. It's a necessary evil.
Yeah,
I think it is a necessary evil. I can't imagine a way that it's gonna really stop. Even if like companies like Murphy's, Illusionist, Vanishing Penguin stop taking on the bad products, people are still going to independently release them.
And you know, the thing is, and I spoke about this to Patrick Woolford, I said to him, one man's trash is another man's treasure. Just because I hate something as a reviewer, you know, I remember looking at this when me and Dave Penn did the Wizard Product Review, there was this stupid little like mechanical dove that you produce at the end of a wand or something, and I trashed the living hell out of that thing and said this is the worst trick ever. And then a few years ago on BGT, a guy got through to the semi-finals by doing that exact trick in his audition. So, you know, and it's the
same. I remember you and Dave, I think you were still on the show then, going tearing Kevin Parker's From Nothing and Passing Through creations shreds. Yeah. Literally two of my favorite magic creations of all time.
Oh, you can shut the fuck up right now in this podcast.
I swear to God.
The From Nothing, the stupid thing with the bag and the fruit, where his whole thing is, hey guys, you want some free fruit? And then you've got this nasty ass
guarantee. For me, that was the time I could literally imagine Blaine doing that on TV. He walks up, there's a paper, a clear-ish plastic bag. With Blaine's style, picks it up, says to somebody, imagine holding something in your hand. What is it? They see it grow kind of visually. The word visual needs to be fucking changed in the magic dictionary too. I'll tell you about this later. And then it's a fucking apple. I think it's brilliant. And it's passing through. I've performed it for layman, and it absolutely fucked them up bad. I mean, like, have people still remember it? And Kevin Parker, as a person, debatable. Those two creations, fucking amazing. So if you were judged Judy and Executioner, you would have stopped those going to market.
Yes, I would have. And that's the point. You know, you mentioned, what if Murphy's stopped selling the bad tricks? How do Murphy's know what the good tricks and the bad tricks are? They don't. It's not their job to decide what the good tricks and the bad tricks are. It's their job to bring it to market. I think it's the end consumer, because the end consumer needs to do the research and figure out if it's for them or not. There's certain tricks that I hate with a passion. From Nothing is a perfect example. You love it. So if we make
it genuinely good, I think it's a genuinely good trick.
Stop selling anything that's bad. Who makes that decision? Who makes the decision that that trick is bad? Murphy's do pull stuff. I know they do. Yeah. But when there's like an ethical dilemma or something, perfect example is Triple Helix. I fucking hate Triple Helix.
Dear.
I got into an argument with, I did a whole rant video on Triple Helix and about how terrible it was. Then I got into an argument with Snake, and I went back and forth with Snake on another rant video about how Triple Helix is awful, and I absolutely hate
it. What did you not like about it? Did you not like the trick, or did you not like the quality of the product?
The everything, but the and I'll tell you why. But the point is, Patrick Cohen in the final of America's Got Talent, or semi-final, final of America's Got Talent, how does he open his act? With Triple Helix. I mean, you know, so like, you know, it's only my opinion. It doesn't mean it's right. I mean, what I didn't like about Triple Helix is he made it look like you could do it anywhere. The trailer was just terrible, because he was out at a festival performing it without a table in the real world with people standing all around him. And I'm like, that's just not going to happen. You have to really see.
Yeah, sometimes the marketing for a product can fucking destroy it before it gets out the gates. Like, I had a trick years ago that caused so much controversy because of the way it was marketed, but was, I think, still a record-breaking selling product that only ever got 14 returns. It was that change thing. It was so these cards that would change in slow motion. Like, it was the slowest ever color change of a bicycle card, and it had a bunch of other features. That should have been a midweek $15 release or $20 release. We're like, hey guys, if you want to do this on social media, here you go. That's it. Should it just be? That's how it should be. So listen, this is not gonna revolutionize magic. This looks super good on camera. I've done it, and I performed it in Italy to foreign speaking people, so I couldn't like bullshit it. But instead, the marketing on that was, I think the slogan for it was, this will change magic forever. And I still get the piss ripped out of me for it. Luckily, I didn't come up with that tagline, but because it was made to be like the biggest and best thing since fucking sliced bread, and you can really do magic now, the controversy surrounding it was extremism. And if instead of being like, hey guys, look, this is what it is, I think the method should have been exposed. I think the marketing should have been, this is what you're getting, guys. It's $20. If you want it, take it. If you don't, leave it there. I think it would have sold double if that was the way it was done. But yeah, so like that Triple Helix, like you said, if it was shown in a...
And also, I thought the tutorial was terrible. And that's my other issue with magic releases. If you're going to release something that's got serious implications when it comes to audience management, and Triple Helix has, because you're producing a pack of cards and you can't let them examine that, because obviously it's very, very gimmicked. And you're doing that like three times and only the last deck can be examined. I think you need to go on the tutorial and you need to address how to do this trick correctly. How do you handle the audience management? How do you handle the angle issues? How are you going to perform it? But the tutorial was literally three quarters of it was, this is how you build the gimmick. And by the way, the quality was terrible. It never looked like it did on the thing. And then the last 10 minutes was like, okay, this is what you're doing. It was one run through. Nothing about theory, nothing about audience management. And for me, it was just a lazy tutorial. But this is coming from somebody who releases products like Visible, where it's got 4.5 hours of explanation. You know, maybe I go
5 hours for the other direction. Quantum.
5 hours for the... Ooh. 5 hours for Quantum, and you're the poor bastard that had to sit there and edit it all together.
I know. It was enjoyable, though. There's two things. I had an idea when you were talking then. Someone should release a series of tricks for TikTok magicians that are designed to be exposed on TikTok. That was just a random thought. What were we talking about? I like the way in some, you know, you spoke about theory on the explanation, which I always include or try to. I remember years ago, Daniel Madison would release PDFs and books, I think, and he would tell you the mechanics of the trick, black and white, and then would say, but I'm not teaching you anything else because it's all about you and your presentation. I used to love that because it was like, it would stop people stealing.
Yeah.
Because do you remember like when Blaine first came to the scene, I think it was like Wayne Houchin would then do releases, and I think Garcia, and everyone was a carbon copy of them.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone, you know, and I think when Madison started doing that, it was really cool because you couldn't copy it because there was nothing to copy in terms of that.
But I think it's a lot of tricks that come out these days where they're trying to improve on something but fail miserably. Like this week's review show that went up at 5 o'clock today, I review Solid by Julio Monturo, which is the key going into a can.
You like key effects, don't you?
I do like key effects, yes.
You should talk more about those in a moment.
This particular key effect, I fucking hate it.
Why?
It's just, the method was just stupid. Did you ever see Prohibition by Charlie Justice?
I bought Prohibition, and I bought a Wizard PK ring.
So first of all, it was basically the same method. So you've got this little gimmick that's made out of plastic that will last 0.2 seconds that you secretly stick to the side of the can. You've got to have a completely empty can. And what you do is you make the gag, you drop the key in the can, and you go to tip it out, and you know it's still inside. It's basically Prohibition. And then you throw it, and it drops into the can. And it's a Prohibition, basically. First of all, they didn't credit Prohibition at all. But it's Prohibition with a can. And then they say, you can do this with a bottle. Oh, really? Yeah, you can. It's called Prohibition. Charlie Justice. back. But the other issue was, this is what was stupid about it. Well, there's many things that were stupid about it. But one of the things was, with Prohibition, you put the bottle cap in the bottle, and then you tip it out, and then that's how you get into the position, right? With this, you put a key into a can, and you pretend to tip it out, but it obviously stays inside the can. When you then do the final move and you throw the key into the can and you leave it in there, you can't get that key out that can. It's impossible. But you just made it look like it was really easy to tip it out, but it's not. The key is only... So now you give it to somebody, they try and get the can key out the can, and you go, oh, you do it. You got it really quickly. No, I can't do it either because I fake... It was just, And then go watch the review. It was dreadful. I hated it. And I actually said, the best thing to do instead, if you're going to want to put an object inside a can, I still don't think anybody has touched Wayne Houchin's impromptu talking can. Yeah, sinful. I couldn't remember the name, but that's why. I have done that for so long. That is my go-to festival trick. When I'm booked for festivals over the summer, I'm like, hey, go and buy a can. Here's a pound. Go and buy a can. I'm going to show you something.
Yeah, I've done sinful a lot.
I love that trick. There's no way you can improve that.
No. Also, there's another one, though, by the Mengel brothers called Breakthrough Coin and Can, and that sounds similar to what Julio Montoro has just put out then, because you put a coin in a can, you quote, air quote, take it out, and then with the coin that you're holding, you air quote, throw it into the can, in some fashion.
Well, that's what Julio's got there, but with a key.
Very derivative of the two things that exist. I don't know. Don't see the need for it on the market.
It's like, it's the point I was trying to make there.
Maybe it is.
If you're going to bring a trick out, and it's based on a trick that you like, I think you need to improve on it in some way.
Yeah,
I think you need to improve on it in some way, and I don't think this improves on anything. I don't think it improves on Prohibition, and I don't think it improves on
or at least seek permission.
Yeah, like for example, I'll give you an example. When I bought out Keymaster, obviously Keymaster is based on Holy Moly, and the reason I felt it was okay to release my version is twofold. One, I've never met anyone who carries a couple of washers around in their pocket. Like, you know, what have I got in my pocket? I've got a washer. Really? but secondly, because you're using a stem, you're able to do that final phase where the hole goes onto the stem of the key. So you're now not just taking the trick, you're adding a second phase. And also because they're keys, you can have them hanging on the chain, which makes it completely covered and blah, blah, blah. There's lots of... But that's an example using one of my own creations of where I kind of had some inspiration. I was like, well, if we did this, it would add two extra phases and blah, 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 blah. And I've got another version of Keymaster coming out soon through Penguin. And you get
this extra, is the one I'm excited about.
You get an extra gimmicked key. And you also get two extra gimmick keys. And you also get like an extra like seven or eight routines including my own personal ring and string routine with a key that's just got an ending that you just won't see coming. And the whole idea is it all ties together. So you end up with a 20-minute act that you can do just by having some keys on your pocket.
That's yeah, it. I'm genuinely going to buy this 100%. Not, I won't be performing it like Magic Man style. You know, like I won't be performing it as a ring and string, but to organically do those routines, it's perfect. It's so good. When is that coming out?
Well, I've just had, I mean, this is a scoop for the people who listen to the podcast, aren't they? I've just had a message last night because we've been holding off because I've needed to go over to the States to film everything. Like they've got everything ready, I believe, from a production point of view. And as I'm showing you the screen right now, I just had a message from Sean Dunn saying, can I call you tomorrow with regards to flights?
Oh, wicked. I was
finally allowed to go over to the States to film all this stuff. So I'd like to think it would be out by Blackpool, to be honest, because they've got everything. I just need to go and film it.
Man, yeah, I genuinely am going to get a copy of that. Yeah, I can't think of any other products in the industry at the minute that excite me, but the Louis LaValle wallet, Keymaster. Is it Keymaster something? Yeah. Is it new 2.0 or something?
I've got a new name for it. I can't remember what the new name is, but yes, they've got a new name. Well, I'm not good with names. As
without,
you
know. Without us sounding like this is more of a product pitch, let's... I mean, how long have we been running for?
I don't know. We've been going for a while. I think there's a couple of other things we need to talk about. You wanted to talk about readers' questions, didn't you? You wanted to say that we want to make a section.
Yeah,
we
were going to talk about... Well, there's an opinion section which we were going to potentially cover, but I don't know how much time you...
We've been going on for a long time. I mean, we could do, or we could leave it until next week. Because to be honest, the opinions thing, we kind of covered with magic products. We started talking about...
We'll leave it till next week. Then we can maybe put up to the readers what maybe they'd like us to hear our opinions on.
Yeah. Is there something that you would like us... We want to do a section on our opinions on something, and nothing is off the table. We've got ideas as to what we wanted to talk about. One thing that we do want to talk about is YouTube exposure, because... Both me and Lloyd have got very different opinions on YouTube exposure compared to the rest of the industry. So that is something we want to talk about. Anything else that you'd like us to talk about? Absolutely nothing is off the table, right, Lloyd?
Yeah, fucking nothing is off the table. And also, send in, if you want to as well, you can just send in any interesting stories that if you have an opinion on something and you just want to voice it, and you can do that anonymously. And so state if you want to remain anonymous or not. In your email or in your private inbox to us on Instagram or Facebook, or anything you want to get off your chest, you can send to us and we'll read it out, discuss it, form an opinion on it.
If you've got a particular thing that you want us to address, how's this for an idea? Do a 1-minute audio file and send it to the email address as an MP3. A sub-1-minute audio file. We'll play that audio file on the podcast, and then we'll comment and give your opinions on what it is that you've talked about in that audio file.
That's brilliant. And if you don't know how to record an audio file, you can literally just record it as a video on your phone, and then send the video, and we'll just cut the audio out and put it on the podcast.
Perfect. Absolutely brilliant. Absolutely.
But awesome. Yeah. So since it's the very first episode, we have no. Do you? I don't think anyone's asked us a question. In the lead up to this,
No, I mean, I do a Q&A on the channel, so I get loads of questions on there. One question I got is, why would you want to do a podcast with that angry dwarf?
I think you're taller than me.
Yeah, no, they think you're the angry dwarf in this whole relationship. I've got to say, I did give that comment a heart purely because it's normally them attacking me, and it was nice to be.
Was that a genuine comment?
Yeah.
I love that. Wait, let me find it.
I can't remember what video it was on, but I've got the settings so that some of this stuff gets automatically done. And I went into it. It was like, why would you want to do a podcast with that Welsh annoying angry dwarf or something?
Who is
like
that from? Was it from Nemed?
No. Well, that's the sort of thing that Nemed would have said, but no, it's not from Nemed.
I was going to say, if they said angry, then they don't know me. But the fact they said annoying dwarf, then... That, yeah, because I don't get angry very often, but I am definitely annoying, and I'm short. I'm 5'8", so I think that's the average. I figured out I'm average height for somebody born for somebody who lived in the 1940s.
So there you go. That's great. keep going. One day you'll be a real boy. So there you go. Awesome. Have we got anything left to talk about, Lloyd?
No, but we do have a competition that we're going to run, a weekly competition where myself or Craig, who wants to send it out this week? The prize will be sent from either me or Craig.
Let them decide. Coin flip. Pick you.
I'll do a coin toss. Okay.
Okay.
Right. I'll call it heads or tails.
Okay.
What do you want? Heads. So heads, you're going to send it, or tails? Yep. Or heads, I'm going to send.
Heads, I'm going to send it. Tails, you're going to send it.
Can you see on the camera? Oh shit!
Is that a head or a tail? It's a head. So I'm going to send it. Right there, okay. You go.
Send it.
I will send you a copy of all of my Alakazam releases that I've bought out thus far. So you'll get a copy of Gossip, and you'll get a copy of the Beyond Stebbins project. There you go.
Ooh, fuck, that's good.
There you go. So
Beyond Gossip and the Beyond. Okay, so, and all the competition.
And I'll throw in a copy of Parlor as well that I bought out years ago through World Magic Shop. So there you go. You get all.
Oh, shit. I was going to send them something like a really nice deck that I've got. I've got a massive collection of.
Fine. You're Welsh, you're tight. But it's not a problem. We get that.
Yeah, that's mine's cool. Shit. I've got some old skates they could have.
Free access to Cognito. There you go.
Yes. Yeah. For next week,
Your prize will be access to Cognito. Free Cognito.
Although this doesn't seem like there's many people that haven't bought it at this point.
Oh, fuck off, Lloyd.
I don't even say that egotistically. It's fucking crazy. Say that
egotistically. I'm pretty sure that 98% of the magic community has already got Cognito.
It's only because my social media profiles have been nuked by everyone that's got it, so it just feels like I'm in a jit surrounded by. There's probably anyone listening to this. Everyone listening to this is probably like, what the fuck's Cognito? What the fuck is that? Is it a type of soup? I don't know.
Could be.
So the competition is we're going to ask. This week is going to be a funny. Whoever makes us laugh the hardest, and we're going to do some. We're going to change it up every week, but this week is going to be a little bit of mock the week inspired comedy. So we're going to give you a round, or basically, we're going to ask you this. We're going to say to you, this is the answer. What is the question? And you have to send us in the funniest question that would, make the answer even more funnier.
It's
so
a bit like Jeopardy. Yeah,
I've never seen Jeopardy. It's
a TV show where it's a game show where they give you the answer and you've got to come up with the question. Like,
yeah. So if the question was a 16 phase ambitious card routine, you would send in the question, what was it that made Prince, who's that one that died? Somebody fall asleep behind the wheel. I don't know.
Let's try this one. I'll save you. What is a Welsh leisure centre? And the question might be, what is a a Welsh leisure centre might be the answer. And the question might be, what is a sheep tied to a post?
Oh, you bastard. Oh, you can't.
There's a good example.
I apologise to any Celtic listeners out there.
Mm-hmm. I'll give you one more example. The answer is Welsh sex trafficker. And the question is, what is a shepherd called in Wales? So,
I don't know if these are racist or not.
Of course they're not. Is Wales a Welsh person and racist? And he's laughing.
Well, I ain't saying shit. But the question, the answer this week is then based off of Holy Moly. The answer, when we chose this earlier, we had a bunch of different random objects and names and words. We had things like ambitious card, coin, and pencils and things, but the magicians' names. And the name we pulled out was Jay Sankey. So Jay Sankey is the answer. What is the question? Make us laugh the hardest, and you will win a copy of Parlor, Gossip, and the Stebbins Project.
Absolutely. All three of them. Yeah.
All three sent to you, signed by Craig Petty in blood and shit.
We value them, I imagine, but yes.
They are fantastic doorstops. And if you have a wobbly table, you can just slip it right under and it miraculously levels itself off.
Amazing. It's really good. And one day, if I continue to sell them, I might get into cognito levels, but I doubt it.
You've got to start selling them first.
Yeah, I've got to sell them. Hey, gossip broke Alakazam servers, don't you know? But
fuck.
Yeah, did it? Released. Yeah, yeah, it got released, and so many people tried to buy it at the same time, it broke their website.
So many people trying to find you. Seat tables are turned numb, motherfucker. Oh, hi, I'm Craig Petty. I've got 8,000 subscribers on my channel.
Well,
you
know. No, I only set the YouTube channel up a year ago. I'm doing okay. You know, what have you got? Five in how many years? Just saying. Anyway, let's move on.
You cunt.
Anyway, I think that's it. I think we're at the end of the podcast, aren't we, mate?
I think that's a great end to the podcast.
I think it is. I think it's awesome. So don't forget, if you haven't already, like the Facebook page. And also, we're setting up a Facebook group as well, so you can debate everything that we've talked about. Also, follow us on Instagram. We've set the Instagram profile up.
Yeah, both pages are Magic Podcast Co. And to email us, it's for me, it's lb@themagicpodcast.co. And for Craig, it's cp@themagicpodcast.co.
And the website is obviously themagicpodcast.co. So you can go check out the website and see more about me and Lloyd and what we get up to and so on and so forth. But yeah, we're going to be back next Wednesday. Subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform. We are literally on everywhere. Apple Podcasts, Android Podcasts, Spotify, Deezer, tons that I've never heard of before. We're on literally everything. So.
Yeah, that blew my mind. Craig said that you uploaded it. Like there's this service that you use that just populates it on pretty everything. Much every existing podcast platform that's it's ever everywhere. Been made. So
everywhere.
It's pretty hard not to find us. But yeah, make sure you hit that subscribe button so you get notified. These going live at 9 p.m. on Wednesday. 9 p.m.
GMT on Wednesday, yeah.
So what time is that? That's California. That's 1 in the afternoon, depending on the daylight savings.
Yeah, in New York, it's about 5 o'clock.
5 o'clock. Perfect. There we go then. And 10 p.m. in 10 to 11 in Europe.
Yeah, so it's a good time to release a podcast. It's a good time for everybody.
Thank you so much for tuning in, everyone. And we hope we haven't offended anyone. We don't mean it. We do mean it, but we're sorry. We're not sorry. And fuck you. Have a nice day.
And on that, we're out.
We apologize for disrupting your normal daily schedule. You may now relax, tuck your deck back in, and resume your regular day-to-day life. Remember to subscribe to be notified the moment each new episode goes live every Wednesday. And join our Facebook group to continue the conversation. The link is in the description to this podcast. Thank you for listening to The Magic Podcast.